order. First item on our agenda is the oath of office.
So tonight we are celebrating that four of our trustees are returning to another term of service. So Deb and Jeremy and Cindy and Dee Dee, thank you very much for your commitment to service to Santa Cruz City Schools. We're incredibly grateful, and we welcome Superintendent Watkins to swear you in.
Okay. I think you've already opened the meeting, right? Yes. Is that correct, Chris?
Yes, I opened the meeting.
Okay. Anyway, it's a pleasure being here. It's my last time to be able to do this, it's really an honor to, again, have worked with Chris for many years, with Gary before her, and swear on this board. Your job is just tremendously important, you know, and to step up in this time and run for an office is incredible. You know, would I do it again? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate all of you stepping up for public education, because it's very critical, and very critical for the county office to work closely with all the districts. Dr. Ferris and Vaughn would have been here today, but he's over in Pajaro, where they're also squirting in their trustees, so he's out that way. I'm going to be over here, he's going to be over there. But anyway, it's been a pleasure working with all of you, and the great work. It's really important work that you're doing. So, anyway, that's it. Okay, where do you want me, Nancy?
Right there's my turn.
Okay.
They're all together.
Please say your name after me, I won't say your name, I'll just leave that blank. It's really easy after, okay? First of all, raise your right hand.
I,
Cindy Reyna,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith
and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States
and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States
and the Constitution of the State of California
and the Constitution of the State of California.
I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely
without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well.
And that I will well
and faithfully discharge.
And faithfully discharge.
Duties upon which I'm about to enter.
The duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations to all of you.
Thank you. All right, now that we're all sworn in, we will begin with our Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda changes, additions, or deletions? Okay, the next item is public comment. Is there anyone here who would like to speak to items not on the agenda?
Yeah, good evening, everybody. I was trying to make sure I get this right. So, Mike Rodriguez, campus supervisor of Mission Hill Middle School, also first vice president for our Santa Cruz Council of Classified Employees. Just want to say thank you. We had a really great negotiations. We finished up and wrapped up our 17-18 negotiations that went great. I did want to tell you guys that our members agreed across the board. Not a single no was a yes for every single vote. And just want to say thank you for all the hard work you've done, Pat. You've been great working with us and just being just really open. And I know it's been a lot of work on some members, your staff, helping out Molly, you two being in there. You guys all just like coming to this as a team, and you guys have a lot of support. I know that we're all working together, you know, just to further our classified employees, and we're seeing changes. We're seeing the attitudes change with all of our employees, and we just want to say thank you. The gratitude is truly felt. We appreciate all that you do. Members, I also want to, the trustees, congratulations on, you know, your election coming back. You know, I'm really happy for all of you. Also, Nancy, I love you, and it's hard to see you go. I wish you a great, just retirement, going to Scotland, having a great time out there.
Thank you very much.
People are bringing me something back. Enjoy your retirement. You work for it. Good for you. I'm happy for you. Enjoy every last minute of it.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for everything. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else like to speak? Okay, we'll move on to our superintendent's report.
Good evening. As always, my report's based on our district goals. In terms of goal number one, some of the things that have been going on in the last couple weeks, had a meeting with the county, or with representatives from across the county on a strong workforce grant. The state is releasing a grant for K-12 career technical education that's going to be run through the community colleges. So the community colleges have been appointed to supervise something for K-12. They didn't get a choice, but they're being great. And Cabrillo is facilitating the conversation between all of the secondary districts in the county and the COE and the Workforce Investment Board, and we're talking about bringing in some more resources to build out our career pathway programs. Also, want to celebrate the Next Generation Science Standards FOSS kit grade level trainings. This last 2 weeks, over 100 elementary teachers have been trained in the NGSS standards, and all of our middle school teachers have been trained at this point. So really incredible work. We want to thank our science coach, Heather Murphy, for her leadership with us. In terms of goal number two, creating positive engaging environments, Pat represented us on the 6th last week on Thursday at a public safety partnership meeting with all of the local law enforcement agencies and the school district leaders, and thank Pat for being there to represent our district's needs and also hear about what's happening in the county. Goal number four, developing a highly collaborative culture, the CSBA annual conference. I want to thank the trustees who attended. It was, I felt it was a really worthwhile conference, learned a lot. It was an opportunity, especially the California Voting Rights Act, an opportunity to have some more learning around that for us as we are considering that as a school district. And our MTSS retreat last Thursday was wonderful. I want to shout out to Dorothy and her Ed Services team for all of the planning that went into making that meaningful conversations for all of our site teams about the tiers of support we're providing for our schools. And the incredible participation of the school leaders and teachers and counselors, and it was a great day. In terms of goal number six, maintaining strong communication partnerships with diverse community. I had a second CTE road revisit at Santa Cruz High School on Tuesday. It was fun to show off the auto shop and other programs at Santa Cruz High to the vocational director for the Santa Cruz Rotary, and they're talking about adding some additional scholarships for students in CTE. Had a meeting with the Santa Cruz Community Foundation yesterday, Molly and I did, and they're going to be granting us some money to support transportation for our high school athletic programs. They called us and said they'd like to support our high school athletic programs, which is wonderful. And then I also, Bob Basso, a Rotarian, visited our Harbor High School Interact 2 weeks ago to talk to the students about how to give an effective speech to support them with the regional speech contest. Mm-hmm. And here's the end of my report. And I tried to make this a surprise, but you know what? Nothing gets by Nancy.
She misses no subtle clues.
And I'm just not good enough at it, but I am going to miss her so tremendously. She's been such an incredible community. She needs to stand. Behind the scenes, making so many things happen and keeping me on schedule
and making sure that, that the needs of the community are met, the needs of the boards are met, the needs of the district are met. And for the last 17 years, you have served the school board in Santa Cruz City Schools. And we are so tremendously grateful for your service. And I'm surprised about your decision, but I am, as a person, I'm so happy for you and so excited about your adventures with Doug. And Doug, thank you for sharing Nancy with us. This is Doug's first board meeting. And I just, everybody I talk to about you going, everybody's afraid for all of us. And because you are just, you take care of all of us so well. And you're always, always, always focused on what's good for kids.
Thank you so much.
And we're just so grateful.
Thank you so much.
And you have a cake back here.
Okay. Well, we'll save it for break time, or we're
going to. We're going to take. We're going to take a picture with you with the cake really quick, and then Molly and Dorothy are going to serve it up for everybody here, and then we're going to get it in the fridge because it's got to be cold, and we're going to send the leftovers home with you.
Okay. I want to say two quick things, and that is, I have loved every minute of working with everybody. So thank you so much for everything. The it is a Herculean effort, however, to keep her on schedule because her schedule is so booked. But other than that, it's been a fabulous, and that was also a fabulous experience. And then I would like to introduce my husband to all of you. This is my much better half, Doug. The most patient man, my husband of 40 years, and so we're very excited to be not putting off our bucket list any longer. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Take a picture really fast.
Absolutely.
Picture of Doug. 17 years. Yeah.
Was she in the district prior to
that?
So God bless him.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to keep going because we have a very full agenda. The next item are our board members' reports. I'll go back to her when she comes back.
I'd like to keep this short, Nancy. You've always been very kind and generous in spirit. And I remember the very first time I thought about running for school board. And you were just very kind and patient with me. And I thank you. Mm-hmm. And I wish you the best.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Nancy, for your service. The person who's the voice of the district is so essential to community perception of who we are. And I have to echo what Jeremy said. When I first considered applying for that interim position, it was Nancy who first took my phone call, returned my call immediately. It was she who helped me through some of the paperwork, and could not have done it more graciously. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to add briefly that I thought that it was a great professional development opportunity for board members to attend the California School Boards Association conference, and that it was very educational for me and a significant opportunity to learn more about charter school petitions, mm-hmm. State finance, student assessment, mm-hmm. and equity issues, and the California Voting Rights Act particularly. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank and congratulate Chris and Deb for being fine presenters regarding equity issues and really represented the district in classy way. Thank you very much.
We'll go back to you, Deb.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'd like to thank everyone here for supporting me and having faith in the third term, so thank you very much. And I'm not going to say anything because I'll cry, so. And I want to commend Chris for doing an excellent job. The presentation she did at CSBA regarding supporting LGBTQ students was widely well received. I got tons of feedback from Reed, who you work with in Santa Clara, the district, and others that attended. And it was a really proud moment for us to be a shining example among our peers. So, great job. And then last week I attended a state homeless emergency funding stakeholder meeting, which was really interesting. I was appreciative to be included. Just trying to figure out feedback in the community regarding the HEAP grant that the city of Santa Cruz is receiving $9 million towards immediate two-year solutions towards homelessness. And so I was able to give some feedback about families in transition and what might suit students in our district. So.
Thank you.
I also want to thank the district for the opportunity to go to the conference, and it was a great learning experience to me. It's probably my fourth conference, and I continue to learn new things. One of the highlights, in addition to Chris's presentation, which I think represented our district incredibly well, was I went to a workshop on best practices in different districts around issues of equity and access. And I think we're doing a lot of things well, and I think we've got a lot of areas and room for improvement. And some of our neighboring districts are doing some amazing things that we can learn from. So I appreciated that opportunity. And Nancy, you are the face and the personality of the district. You're kind of the first point of contact for me as a board member. It has always been positive, always been cheerful. Even when I come to you with crazy questions that you may not have the answer for, you find the answers for me. And I really do have appreciated everything that you give, not just to us as board members, but to the district. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be submitting my board report, but Nancy, I echo the sentiment. And it was so bittersweet for the fact that I'm very, very happy that you're going to have your private life back. And I'm very, very sad that we don't have, I mean, I consider you our personal Encyclopedia Britannica for the district. And I do think that we need to be cognizant that there will be an adjustment period, not that our newest member of the team is not capable, just the fact that Nancy had such a breadth of knowledge and a rhythm to what happens around our school year. So I want to thank you for your service to us, and I'm very happy to have met Doug, and I wish you both well.
Thank you so much.
Let me go first, and then you can do something. Okay. So I just want to thank you for your calm efficiency, your positive attitude, and your sense of humor. And like the others, I never hesitated to ask you questions, and you were always very helpful.
Thank you so much.
And we have a board.
Okay, so I do want to say two things for board report, because to me they're some of the best things about the city schools. And one was that I got to go to Elaine Balaban's class and see the reader's workshop. And it was such a trip to see not her enthusiasm with it and the excitement of the kids, and to see how kids at different levels could join together to learn, and how they picked up all these little tricks from each other that helped them with reading. Had a great time. I got to go back to Bayview. That was great, too. And then I went to the LGBTQ task force meeting, which was just mind-blowing to me in terms of what we would always like meetings to be. In that they talked, the first thing they did was check in with everybody to make sure that everybody was all right, kind of, which was really nice. But then they talked about the survey they did and how it brought up questions about where kids were feeling safe versus where they may be having trouble, not in terms of schools, but in terms of where they were perceiving that they could find safety across all schools, and where they still had some concerns. The study was small. It was kind of a baseline study more than anything else. So there was a decision not to use the findings as they are right now, but to build on them over the next year, because the numbers were too small to make any meaningful conclusions by schools or by departments or types of situations. And then they asked a question, which I just thought was a great way to run a meeting, which was basically to ask everybody to think about the two or three things that they would like to see happen in the next year that would help kids feel safer. And then after they asked that question, and you were supposed to write down your two or three things that you'd like to have changed, they asked what we were going to do personally for each one of those things that we wanted to have changed. And it really makes you think, you know, this is my responsibility, not someone else's responsibility to do. So I was very, very happy with it. And then there's Nancy. Nancy, when I kept thinking about tonight, and I kept thinking about what to say, and I all the things I thought of, I can't say because I won't make it through it. But I have to say, for all the good times and hard times I've gone through, you have just always been that happy face for me. We shared our sense of humor, and you were always there to call me back right away, especially when I did things like forget what meeting I was supposed to be at.
And it was always my pleasure.
Watch out, that's going to happen again. So, because I get the fun of being part of a family business.
Can we take it over here?
You get the benefit from it. At least I hope it's a benefit. I'm going to let Claudia carry it over. And I just want to say, this is from all of the board members. It's not just from me. And it's because we love you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I just want to explain to you that we went with the travel theme. But if the books aren't right for the theme, if you're going different places, that's fine. You take the books back and get the books you want. And there's also in there, there is a bookshop card, too, so that you can get the novels and the detective stories.
Oh, this is so nice. Thank you so much.
Well, I want you to have fun. We all want you to have fun. Oh, now I have to get up. I can't.
Thank you so much.
Oh yeah, Nancy's also the one that got me to finally use the electronic way of doing board meetings, and I'm very grateful because I was getting lost.
So thank you also very much.
Okay, moving on. Approval of the minutes. We have the minutes for November 7th first. Do you have a motion?
I'll move approval.
Second.
Okay. It's Deb and Dee Dee.
And Dee Dee, thank you.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 7-0.
Thank you.
Now the minutes for November 28th.
Move approval.
Second. That was
Cindy.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
I'm going to abstain because I was in the
session. Thank you.
Okay, our next item, we have the consent agenda. Are there items that trustees have questions about or would like pulled? Jeremy?
Yeah, 8.17, 8.18. 8.23, 8.32, 8.35, 8.33,
8.32,734.
That was just a joke. It ends at 8.3.33.
Okay, that's the last one. And are these questions or you want them pulled?
I think there are questions.
Okay, well, is there anyone else? Okay, go ahead then and start with the 8.1. Okay.
8.17 is the
development.
Right, that's right. 8.17 is the development. So 8.17 on the development fees. Righty right. Here we go. So, could you just explain that very, very simply to me? We get this money, and yet we're running a deficit. So that just didn't make total sense to me.
So what's been explained to me is in 15-16, there was an audit of the developer fees, and at the conclusion of that audit, and this is before I learned more, but that the developer fees on the elementary side were in a deficit, and the developer fees on the secondary side were not in a deficit. So what the district, and you may recall this, but this was been shared with me, is that what the district began to do since that point in time is look at the fees that are coming in and trying to address that particular deficit on the elementary side.
But how could the deficit have gotten there in the first place when these are fees we get? You're helping me here because I have a kind of a dumb question.
Yeah.
So when there's new construction, the people building the new construction have to pay fees to the city, and we get a piece of that.
That's exactly.
So how did we run a deficit?
I don't know the answer to that question, Jeremy.
So we're trying, with the new fees that we get, we're trying to pay down the debt.
That's right.
So is it safe to assume that expenditures were just charged to this account, which did not have been charged to this account?
That's right. So I think they came in and they went back. I don't know the details, but I'm happy to talk to the auditing firm about what the audit generated and then share that with you via email through the superintendent to give you some historical perspective on it.
But
which
you're assuming that Cindy's assumption is
that's right. How those fees were split and how those costs were incurred, if there was portables that were brought in, how those fees were utilized to pay for those pools at Galt Elementary as opposed to another site.
All right.
Okay. But I'm happy to, my own purpose is too, I want to go back and look at some history to understand that more clearly.
Okay.
The next one?
So then we have a book in and of itself, Single Plan for Student Achievement. And my main question is with formatting. It's obviously a lot of pages. And my question is, it's clearly not an appropriate thing to go through this page by page and discuss strengths and weaknesses for each school at this time. So, I wish Chris was here. So.
I'll let her know.
So let me repeat that. Because I'm asking for clarification from the board, too. So we've been given, it's probably 600 or 700 pages. Mm-hmm. And it's the single plan for student achievement from all of the sites.
Right.
And so the purpose of us having this, is it then at this meeting, before we approve it, but yet it's on the consent agenda, is it to ask questions about the various sites and questions we may have? Oh, this site appears to be doing very well in this area, but this site appears to be struggling in this area. Or is it just for our general purpose reading? Because if it's for specific questions, why is it on the consent agenda? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question.
Dorothy?
Thanks.
Okay. Well, it is a lot of reading, I agree with you. And one positive is that moving forward, the template is actually going to be more aligned with the LCAP. And I'm not quite sure if that's going to be good or bad, but it will be very integrated with what we're doing. So the plans for student achievement it really is a joint effort with the school site council. And so because that is where a lot of the input occurs and the crafting of the plans occur, we certainly welcome questions from the board and comments around it. But really it is the entity of the school site council, which is who are the representatives who really, like I said, give input and craft the plan. We also had this, did we have it on the, we had it on our previous agenda.
It was.
So,
right.
Yeah, so we certainly can allow for more time to give input if you felt like you needed to question anything, moving forward.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right. Nobody else on 8.1.8? All right. 8.2.3. And 8.2.3 is, we've done the developer fees. That's 8.2.3, consultant services, Santa Cruz High School certified athletic trainer service provider. It's $30,000 out of Measure O. I'm assuming that we're spending this at the other two sites as well, but we're not seeing it here.
Well, actually, so we do have Scott Campbell's at Soquel High, so it's a similar contract. And then PAMP donates one athletic trainer, and that athletic trainer is at Harvard.
So there's
pay for two, and we get three.
Okay, and how come we don't have the one from Soquel High here?
I believe that one has already come to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So I just have a click on that. Noticed, and I'm not sure if it was a typo, but will this athletic trainer under number 4, and I think it just probably was typed this way, it says the athletic trainer will be responsible for aiding in the prevention of injuries, maintenance, health, for under the umbrella of Soquel High students. Do you think that's just a typo?
It is a typo.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you.
So then we go to 8.3.2, and I'm adding the $130,650 and the $64,350, and you get an exact $195,000 a year. That it reads, approve the Bartos Architecture Amendment Agreement for Program Management Services District-wide for the 18-19 fiscal year. So question number one, I'm assuming this is an ongoing expense that we're going to be seeing for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years?
That's right. This will be for these types of services on an as-needed basis for the district.
Further question, and this $195K, part of that is having Mark come or Mark's assistant come, or both of them together, to talk to us and update us.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. I just have a follow-up on that. So within that contract, as well as the contract for MADI and, Bartos, MADI and Belli, their school sites are covered within that we have listed as the other contracts. So I just wanted to know how they parse out the hours and the cost for each school site that would be tagged along to their budget, meaning that you have 8.3.3, which is the multi-project overhead for Bartos, and 8.3.24, which is for MADI, and they give numbers for schools, and I actually asked Trevor to help answer why the Harbor High bond site, multi-project overhead was $33,000 as opposed to the Soquel High, which was $66,000 for basically the same contracts. And then where would we find how much the contract within the contract is for Santa Cruz High on Bartos? I'm just looking to see where that type of accounting will land for school site budgets.
So reporting-wise, Patty, we can incorporate that and highlight that the next time we do kind of a recap of expenditure reports for you to capture those costs and call them out so you see those tracked throughout time under that particular category. And then from a budgeting perspective, too, Joe, I know you shared something with Patty. Do you want to speak to that later?
Yeah, so there's also a subtle difference between the Bartos one and the Belli Maddie one. Those two specifically adjust for their sites only. Mark has some additional responsibility for some general oversight financially over the whole thing. So his is a larger chunk. And as I explained to Patty earlier, these are kind of guesstimates to what they think is going to be. And I've asked them to be conservative. Now, Harbor's is smaller because most all of the Harbor's projects are pretty much aligned, and there's very little left flexibility-wise within the budget to go outside of those parameters, so we have a fairly good handle on what's coming. SoCal, we've only really committed to those initial things, and they're still finalising a lot of different potential balls in the air. So there's more work to be done, so it has more potential for more hours. These hours are all done T&M. This isn't an open checkbook. These are all based on very specific things that they normally wouldn't do as part of a project. But that's why it's called multi-project overhead. Part of that whole making the soup, so to speak, and part of it also coming and doing additional presentations, doing additional meetings with on-site councils above and beyond what was planned, to try to aid our wish to be more transparent and have better communication. So there's some variable in there based on their perception and also based on each site's slight differences of where they're at in kind of defining their master plan.
The other quick comment for you, too, just I know that in terms of cost, like Trevor says, really, this is on an as-need basis on a time, based on an hourly basis that they're billing for their time for these types of services. And some districts spend between 3 and 5% for these type of program management services. This percentage is much less than that. Okay, so if you look at that overall cost, this is less than, I think we're in the 0.5% range. I think Bartos is what the placeholder is, but it's on an as-need basis, on an hourly basis, and we can highlight those costs and expenditures. The next presentation we do for on expenditures, we can highlight those costs for you.
Okay, if it's on an hourly basis, then we should tell Mark that when he's going to present at 8:30, he doesn't need to be here at 6:30. Well, I'm just saying. I was always wondered about that.
Yeah.
I mean,
No, it's good. It's good.
I'm not sure if time is money, but okay.
In that case.
All right, 8.3.5, Carroll Engineering Proposal, National Bridges, Artificial Field. I go to the facilities master plan, and I see Yandeed, replace existing grass turf with artificial turf. And then in parentheses in the master plan, City Parks Department to partner with the district and to contribute an additional funds contingent on grant approval. So we're starting to pay for that. There's a $10,000 fee here. I'm just wondering if that is happening.
We weren't able to get the grant.
Oh.
We didn't qualify. We did apply.
Okay.
But we are looking at a scaled back field that could be used, rented, become a revenue source.
So we're still going to do the field, but it's not going to be as elaborate or as big or whatever as if we've gotten the grant.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
And then we own it. It's not in partnership with the city.
Patty, add something on that?
And so just to follow up to that, would that field be an offset for the needs for Santa Cruz High because we have obligations to our charter? Does that become ours in the lineup for our students at Santa Cruz High or any carryover from Mission Hill in that direction?
It would probably primarily be used by PCS, but it means PCS won't be using our other fields.
Yeah, it frees it up. Mm-hmm. And then just to follow up, I see that we use Carroll for the contract, and I am know because or have been made aware that we do these reach outs under what we call the CUP CCA, and they're under a certain amount of money. But do we reach out to local firms for that?
We've been using local firms on a lot of our projects. Some of with these professional services, a lot of times it has who has the capacity to deal with this at this point in time when we're asking. And a couple of the local firms that we're using, we have them pretty busy,
okay.
As do other people. So, we do try to use the locals first. I like to be able to knock on people's door with a lot of things.
Thank you.
Okay, then 8.3.11, we're at B40, and it says $500,000 for a new pre-manufactured music classroom. I do see it on the facilities book. And I was talking to Chris about this. But it's not, there's no place for it or placeholder for it in the, I just don't see where it's going to be.
Can you show Jeremy where it is on the...
We don't actually 100% know.
Oh, okay. Well, Okay, yeah, because
the master plan, we were trying to put it here.
Near the innovation center.
Sorry, here. We're trying to put it right here.
Okay.
Unfortunately, DSA is throwing some curveballs at us saying we'll have to sprinkle this whole complex. So that adds hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we're looking at either city and center here, which we don't currently like very much because...
Where the new shade canopy is?
Exactly.
But it's a new shade canopy.
It takes away from the new shade canopy. So we're actually thinking about putting it in the corner right here now, and it's currently in the hands of the principal and some of his staff to discuss some of those options and get back to us with some either yes, we like it, or please find somewhere else. Okay?
And then last but not least, 8.3.33, we're back at Harbor High, and so I see that we've got another $125,000. It's a change order, and the previously approved contract amount was $8.5 million, and now it's $8.65 million. I'm wondering if this is pretty much it.
We are very close to the end.
So it's safe to say, if asked, that the Harbor High Athletic Field project is coming in, as we thought, a little bit under $9 million.
That would be a reasonable statement, yes.
That's all, folks.
Okay, and Patty.
So I have a follow-up question to that. When will we be provided with a reconciled dollar amount and report on that so that the numbers are actually matched to what we're thinking here? Because I know there were things, and I'm not sure if they're in the XL construction, but we purchased a $500,000 bathroom. We did walkways. There's been parts for the baseball field and others, and they may not show under the terminology of the field, but they still are dollars spent. And I, as we move forward, I'd like to be comfortable in knowing that maybe that portion of that, any project, the swimming pool at Jokel, I'll use that as the example, cost X amount of money, but what we may have not, or what I'd like to be able to know that I'm considering when spending for the next project or making any decisions with the board, is the reconciled amount of dollars spent.
Patty, can I just ask a clarification? Are you interested in, for subsequent projects come forward to you, that... you see that the for this a completed set of projects that shows a balance relative to the budget that was, I'm sorry, I'm getting detail, but if we show what the budget was for the site, we subtract from that the completed projects so that you see the essential remaining balance in the budget and what the cost is of the project relative to that remaining balance. Would that, does that, may I get into too much detail with you, Pat? I'm just trying to understand what would be helpful
well,
for you.
Well, I think what would be helpful is that we've only had one report, and it's on the website, so not just for me, but for the community to know what's been spent. It's been over a year, and, of course, these things are happening, lots of moving parts. But I'm never quite sure where we are or what we've spent and committed to. And I don't know that we have a process that really allows for it. And, we say this number in a ballpark, but just like at home, you reconcile the checkbook and you say, okay, we've spent all this money. Where's the reconciled report? We are having contracts with Bartos and MADI, but it's the district who is handling that piece of it, we should be able to see that. And it should be on our website for our community to see. So, whenever we say that's 2% of the budget, that's fine. I can take 2% of $1 million and understand what that is. But 2% of a budget being spent when we've already spent 96% means we only have 2% of that budget left. So I'm just looking for the best way to report out to keep everybody apprised.
Actually agree, but I'm just wondering procedurally. It sounds like we're going off.
Off the topic.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. You've heard my concerns, and we can bring this up further down the line.
We could talk about it during government.
That would be a better time. Yes.
Yes. Or okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
And we just, we are going to have a budget update in January. Mm-hmm.
Should be in there, right?
Yeah. Comments from the public? Is there a motion?
I move approval. Second.
Deb and Dee Dee? It's a roll call?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Next item is report of actions taken in closed session. Dee Dee?
The Board of Education took action on certificated classified management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. Ms. Parks did not have any information to share with the trustees regarding public employee discipline, dismissal, release, complaint. The Board of Education printed an update from and provided direction to Ms. Parks regarding negotiations with GSCFT for 2018-19. The Board of Education conferred with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. The case is the California Voting Rights Act trustee area elections.
Thank you. All right. Next item, staff report on the workforce housing.
Thanks, everyone. So tonight, we want to give you a quick update on what's happening with workforce housing. We are waiting to find out what the results were of Measure H. And what potential funding source we might have as a result of that. So we had talked about before we take next steps, we wanted to see what the result of that election was, and that was not successful. So now we're bringing forward to you, we're revisiting with you the workforce housing project. And tonight what we're going to spend some time with you on is talking about an option. Which of the options we would like to pursue relative to the options that are available to us from a construction perspective. So we want to get a little direction with you tonight, and we'll give you a backdrop about what that option is that we think is a good way to go and why we think that's beneficial for us as a district. Devin Lincoln's here tonight from Lozada Smith, so Devin's going to spend a little time with us too. Devin has shared with you in the past different construction models, and so Devin's going to spend a little time with you tonight talking about the design-build option. We think that's a good way for us to go for this particular project. As a backdrop, we don't feel we're experts in housing. We spend a lot of time on classrooms and school buildings, but we don't spend a lot of time on housing. And so we want to defer some folks who've been down this path before, and we feel that of these multiple options that are available, that that's the way we want to go. I provided to you, I provided to you in your packet just kind of a recap of the last set of slides that we presented to you. And we highlighted some things that we still need to work on. And so we've captured in here that we want to do some further work as we refine this particular project, like a server or survey of renter population. We have further work to do on the building size and parking requirements, details like that, doing site engineering and the whole financing and feasibility studies. Financing and development, permitting and programming period, and define those from a timeline perspective, and then design the site plan, finalize and initiate the town process, and then other recommendations. So this is direct bullets from the last slide set that we shared with you with DCG and our finance personals here. And so I wanted to capture those for you in terms of just walking back to what we looked at last time. So I'm clicking on this one. So, you're familiar with two of the options we've used in this district. We've done design bid build, and we've done lease-leaseback. We've done a lot of projects with the lease-leaseback perspective. But tonight we want to talk to you a little about design build, and Devin's going to talk to you a little about that and share some of the highlights with you. And I may just turn it over to Devin. You want the microphone, Devin? Are you okay? You need a pull.
Oh, no, I'm actually over that, so I'm good. Can you hear me? Am I good? Okay, great.
Hi.
So when we talk about a major construction project in school districts, these days there are really three major options. And the first is the one that you're probably very familiar with. We call it design, bid, build, or DBB, which another way I think of that is the default rule for construction is you take it out for competitive bidding, you award the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. The second option, one that is well in use in this district, is lease-leaseback, which is an alternate model that has been under some scrutiny from the courts and the legislature in the past few years. although I can tell you that today we're in an environment where at least leaseback has been, the legislature looked at a couple years ago, what do we do with this whole model? And they essentially continued to embody it as an option for school districts while inventing a new selection process. So we're in a fairly stable environment for leaseback legally. The third option, and one that is little used by schools these days, is design-build. I want to tell you that design-build is it's as common in community college districts as leaseback is in school districts. For various reasons, design-build is the model that community colleges reach to when they don't want to go to competitive bidding, for various reasons. 2 years ago, roughly, the legislature lowered the threshold where school districts can use this model, design-build, to a project over $1 million. And we started to see, with that lowering of the threshold, a few school districts trying this out, seeing how it works for them. What design-build is, literally, is you award a contract to a single entity who does exactly what the title says, designs a project, and then constructs it for you. Now, I want to focus on that entity for a second. That entity can be, I think I said this to Pat earlier today, it can be a contractor, an architect on staff, and can do the design work. It can be a contractor who subcontracts the design work. Or it can be a joint venture. It can be an architect and a contractor together submitting a proposal. But the entity is essentially who's going to perform the contract for you. So in contrast to design, bid, build, where you hire an architect and they design a project for you, or leaseback, where you hire an architect and they would design a project for you, and then you select a contractor, this is a model where you're selecting one entity who's going to do both the design and the construction. Because it's a little understood model, there's some preconceptions that come with design-build. One of them is that you don't use design-build where you want a significant control over the design, because you're essentially handing off the design to a single entity. I think that's an observation that's mostly true, but I think there's a lot of controls you can build into your design-build contract to say this is how we want it to look and how we want it, the interaction we want to have with you over the design. The other is that there may be some concerns about checks and balances between the architect and the contractor, right? Whereas in the traditional design bid build model, you've kind of got the architect pinned against the contractor in terms of performance. In reality, in the projects that we've seen come forward, those disputes are not common. Not as common as, say, the design bid build model where you have contractor and architect. So when Pat and I and Trevor have been talking about this workforce housing project, we keep coming back to the design build model as something that seems to fit here. And I kind of want to talk through why I eliminate the other two options. The first is that for design bid build unit, again, you're going for the lowest competitive bid. You're going to hire your own architect. You're going to invest in having an architect design a housing project, which, as Pat just mentioned, is not within, the traditional scope of a school district. And then you're going to award the lowest bidder. That doesn't give you a lot of control over what that project ultimately turns out to be. Leaseback is a model that most of the clients I work with enjoy, because you enjoy a lot of team work with the contractor. It's a team approach with the architect, but again, that's not necessarily called for here. So design-build offers a model where you're going to hand off this project to an entity to provide a project that meets the specs you put forward. One element I haven't touched on is that typically in a design-build project, you actually do have a district-side architect who plays a somewhat limited role. Usually that person will at least provide what we call the bridging document, which is basically they sketch what it's going to look like. And you do that before you even get into the RFQ process for selecting a contractor. And they stay next to you and help you through the process. And really briefly, and then I'll take questions, the process, if you go down the route of design build, is to engage that architect, do a bridging document, a schematic, essentially, the new issue is called an RFQ, a request for qualifications, to try to find out who are those entities who might actually be qualified to perform this project. You screen those contractors, you approve a limited list of who's going to be able to propose on the ultimate RFP, request for proposals. And then those folks actually provide you with a proposal including a ballpark estimate on the contract value. You have significant control over what goes into the selection process, including not just ultimate price, but also design factors, track record, experience with the type of construction, etc. So it likely is leased back today. It provides more flexibility than design, bid, build, you know, lowest responsive bidder. Questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are there any financial implications to one versus another?
Big question. It's a good question. You are not ultimately selecting your design build contractor on the basis of lowest price. So there is.
Could you repeat that?
You're not selecting your design build entity exclusively on the basis of the lowest price. You can, but typically, people don't like to do that. Unless you take into account other factors, which is also true for a lease-back model. So, anecdotally, there's an understanding in school district construction that there's been a debate for a long time. With lease-back and design-build, do you end up with a higher price because you're not driving to that lower price with a competitive bidding model? But on the other hand, do you end up with more price surety? You know, you have a partner who has review the construction, understand what's involved, is not going to change order, you adapt once the contract's awarded. There are many proponents of either lease lease back or design build will tell you you end up with fewer change orders, much more comfort on the price you will award the contract at with a lease back or design build model than you would with a competitive bidding model. Both options do, though, all three options have potential for change orders in.
And the financing aspect of it is the same.
Yeah, any of these options can be paid for through the range of different financial options that Pat and I discussed, including whether that be general fund or be certificate of participation. There's not a restriction on what money you spend on any of these options. Yeah.
Can I just add? I was finally able to reach the. San Mateo Community College District. They are about to begin the third workforce housing project. And their chief of staff for the Office of the Chancellor actually has offered to host any of you that would like to come visit any of the projects that they have out there. But one of the things he told me, he said, you know, I said to him, if you could do things over, what would you do differently? What are the things that you would avoid? What are the thing, kind of the obstacles and challenges that you face? He said, I would have spent more money on the quality of construction to start, because I'm on my first project, on their first project, I'm right now, 10 years later, I'm having to replace a bunch of appliances, and I'm having to replace a bunch of carpet and things. I wish I had done an upgrade initially so that things would last longer. So that was one of his pieces of advice that I recorded from our conversation. We talked a lot about community engagement and other things. And if we have direction from you to move forward, we'll hire someone to work with us. That would be also part of our next steps, is the community engagement and outreach work, because we've done only small pieces of that till this point.
Go ahead.
One last question for me. Thank you. So obviously, we're not the only entity, public or private, that's looked at a 75 or 80 or 85 unit housing complex. Are there blueprints to choose from that we could also look at?
First of all, the first part of your question, I have clients up and down the Central Coast right now who this is a very central issue. It's of importance from here to Monterey and farther south. And so I think this district is closer than any of the other districts, but everybody's looking at this right now, trying to find the best model. But I know Pat has talked to some of the modular building contractors who do have blueprints, who do want to get into this space, who can build, you know, two-story apartment complexes, and that's definitely part of our thinking about the design-build model. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Sydney?
Can I ask you a quick follow-up to Chris's comments? San Mateo, which of these construction options have they chosen? Do you happen to know?
You know, I don't know what they did.
The question I had for Devin, thanks, was you said, if I heard you right, that under the design build there'd be less control on the actual design as compared to the DBB or the leaseback. I didn't quite follow the logic of why that would be.
Yeah. Well, I kind of talk about anecdotal.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of folks report that design build, you know, you're handing off design to a contractor, essentially, and they're presenting the design to you. You know, I don't think that there's any reason you cannot build into a design-build contract, and we built into our design-build contracts significant controls over. You don't move forward with that design until we have final design.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Cindy, can I just add to that, too? Because some of them, and Devin, thank you for mentioning that. I'm sure you're
okay. I'd like to just follow up that a little bit. When Devin talked about the bridging documents,
mm-hmm.
that's where you get a lot of the control as to the quality issues that Chris was talking
mm-hmm.
to. You set minimum standards for materials. A lot of the people that do this type of project are also the same. They're like developers.
Right.
So they go in and they do these massive projects, and they go buy from a manufacturer 2,000 washers and dryers. So they get them a super discount. But they also sometimes get them somewhat custom-made, like Sears gets theirs custom-made. They're all made in the same factory, but they get slightly cheaper or slightly more expensive components. And that's where that bridging document becomes really important, to set a standard. Now, that standard comes at a cost. You know, it raises the cost of construction. So you're always trying to find that balance between getting a really good deal and yet not getting a cheap. That's where the control comes in those bridging documents.
Just one thing to hit on again that Devin spoke to, and I think Trevor spoke to a little bit too, is that in the presentation you saw previously, we had our financial folks here, we had the other consultant here. There has been outreach to some of these manufacturers, and I know that there is an organization that's a former Alameda Naval Air Force Base that's building housing that's modular, and they're beautiful, you know, buildings. But the cost for the modular is not as expensive. You're taking advantage of the technology that's advancing. With a design build option, you can work directly with that entity who's doing that, because they have, as opposed to redesigning something new, said, hey, if it's a, you know, I'm not sure if Tesla's the right example, but you know what I'm saying? But if there's something that's essentially not off the shelf, but there's something you can do a variation of, then there's some cost efficiencies, which was one of your questions too. Are there financial implications? So this project, when we look at it from a cost perspective, you know, we want it to pencil out, and we're also we've experienced this in our bond projects, the escalated cost of construction. And so we want to take advantage of, if there's a cost efficiency in the market where the, you know, hard construction costs are continuing to escalate, if we do a design build agreement with one of these folks too, that have people on staff that can do it, and they've done this, and I'm not sure if off the shelf is the right term, but we take advantage of what's available to us. It gives us that flexibility. Don't say, well, we have an architect come to you and say, hey, you want to design it differently than what you've got off the shelf. Does that help?
Yep.
Maybe.
Okay. Patty, you're next, and then Sheila.
Thank you, Devin, and I know that this is a piece of it, but I'm just a little bit confused, and especially when I hear some of what's been said. I know that we have been presented, and first of all, I know this is a huge issue for workforce housing, and I'm very much behind it. But I'm asking these questions sort of in a process way, because we are talking about our options for moving forward, but we haven't had any conversation around governance of the entirety of the project. So when I hear Ms. Monroe say that she's speaking to someone in San Mateo who's talking about washing machines, and Pat had started the conversation with, we're not in the housing business, this concerns me, because I'm barely keeping up with what we have now as a governing unit. So I'm wondering, in this time frame and as we make a decision or not as a board on this piece, where we're going to have the governance of this project and where will it sit? There's lots to happen. You know, are we going to be financing it? Are we going to be in the money business that way? So I'm not wanting to dampen any parade, and it's not that I don't want this to happen. It's I want full community buy-in when I'm moving, and I do not want to call about the washing machines breaking at the new project. So I'm just trying to figure out where the horse is to the cart here, if they're even on the same plane.
I'm going to tell you, I don't want that phone call either, for sure. And one of the things, and it's been a while since I did the initial presentations on how these are managed in school districts and in community college districts, but you hire someone to manage the facility for you, to do the oversight of the facility for you, to take care of rents in this community college district's rents, just a paycheck deduction. We're going to need to have those conversations with our bargaining units and with you moving forward as we kind of work out what would be the agreements on how would we want to do the management, what would be the regulations we'd want to establish. Would you want to establish a separate oversight board for this project? Those are all things that we would need to consider. And as I've talked to other districts that have done this work, once they hire someone to partner with, then you begin those things. You begin the community engagement in full force. You begin the work in conversation to establish those guidelines for how you'll operate the workforce housing. And all those things happen kind of as next steps, and that's part of what Pat is going to talk about in terms of a potential timeline.
So just a follow up on that. So you move forward, if I'm understanding as you explained it, and you have this contract with the build, and then you put the governance piece over it and decide. You don't put the governance parameters first and have some of those conversations before you enter a contract and spend the money to be with the architect and builder? Should you go with this?
I think, Patty, that there's... So we're going to partner with folks, and we're going to learn from folks what's been successful. Santa Clara Unified has done it. Other school districts have done this. And we can reach out to those folks and take a look at some of those things, like Christopher's covenants, I think you referred to. That's part of the whole timeline piece. But tonight was to get that thing in motion. We're trying to get on the front end that says, of these paths from a construction standpoint, I think that once that construction parameter is defined, we have time between the length of time it takes folks to design it, the length of time it takes to build it. We've got time in between then to define those covenants, for lack of a better term, by working with other school districts. And in parallel with this, we have to talk about the whole financing piece. We've worked with our finance person who's come in, and we've looked at some high-level financing numbers relative to these estimates. But there's that piece, too, that we have to go through that process as well to bring back to you, ultimately, a COP, which would fund this. So there's steps in the process.
COP, again?
Certificate of Participation. Like when we've done fields in the past, you use a certificate of participation to pay for
financing.
Those fields.
So we're financing more money of the public's for this, to be clear.
Ultimately, Patty, that the revenue stream that's generated from the facility itself will offset those costs. It'll pay for itself.
And when Mark presented to us in October, he outlined that we wouldn't have to pay on the debt for the first 2 years while it was under construction.
Right.
We wouldn't begin the debt service until we started to have rent revenue, so that it wouldn't be a general funded expenditure.
Okay, Sheila, you're next, and then Dee Dee.
Well, thank you, Pat. That helped me. I was kind of feeling like I was Alice in Wonderland here. I understand that we're kind of getting an idea of the whole project, but we're just really tonight trying to decide between lease back, and design build. Is that right?
That's correct. That's
okay.
Really,
so like, I'm all ready for that, and I'm like, why are we talking about all this other stuff? But I can see we're getting all the next steps. But from that point of view, okay. So I'm just gonna ask it the way it goes in my mind, like. What's the reason we would choose to have the same group or person be design and build? I mean, when I think back in the way I always learned things, it's like, if you go to a bookshop that also has sells tea and coffee, you're maybe not going to get such good tea and coffee, and you might not have enough book. You know, I mean, it's like, why is this a good idea? It's a good idea because why do we have more choice with this than we do with lease back in terms of the quality and the actual things? I don't understand it. I don't have anything against it, but I don't understand it.
I'd rather Trevor say something before I, because I'm having an answer.
Like I said earlier, a lot of these type of projects are done by large developers and they specialize in this. There's not that many architectural firms or just contractors that specialize in this. And so you're bringing a significant amount of expertise to this type of project.
So you're getting people who've specifically done this before, and that's the difference.
So they're used to buying things in bulk. They're used to sourcing things out from independent supply chains. They're used to doing the type of things that bring economies of scale where, and I'll use this in kind of a vulgar sense, but we really, really, really care about how our classrooms look and function and work for our students. For the rental things, it's not that we don't care, but we have far less opinion about whether the refrigerator goes here or here. It's about them figuring out all the spatial uses they've done a thousand times, and we let them do what they're best at, and we just sort of leave our hands off.
And that designer, Sheila, is resident with that, within that organization.
Right, yeah, I understand
so
that part, but I couldn't understand why that was a good idea. So that makes some sense why it's a good idea.
It also brings the impression of chickens, hen houses, and foxes. And that's where bridging documents, again, give us that
because
control or leverage, but it sets a standard that's an expectation. And that architect partner that works for us directly,
right,
that's sort of holding our hands through the process, is also kind of our quality control, our checks and balances to make sure someone's not pulling the wool over our eyes. So it's a process.
So we do have somebody else who has created that first vision, mm-hmm, and who's watching over it, and it, because the danger with this way of doing it is that we don't care about, you know, if somebody told me, how do you make a trailer that would work well, I'd be like, well, I don't know, just stick the stuff in and, you know, there's the kitchen. So you're saying that's also a danger as well as, so by
in
having the architect.
The materials it is, and that's what Chris was alluding to earlier. You know, they wish they'd selected slightly high-grade materials.
Right.
So we can establish that in the beginning, that sets a standard. So when they submit to us, hey, here's the carpet we're going to use, we got this great deal on whiz bang new blue carpet, mm-hmm, and we look at it and go, well, that's not even the same quality material, it's not manufactured the same. Sorry, great idea, but we don't want it.
Right, but along the lines of what Patty was saying, then what we're trying to do is choose the people who would be, who we might like to lead this. We are doing that before we put all the pieces in, because we don't want to be in charge of all the pieces, right? By ourselves. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Dee Dee, you're next.
I didn't get the Fox's comment. The contractors and the architects. The contractors and so my question is similar to Sheila's, and I'm struggling with it a little bit. The designers and the contractors are working together. And we're cutting one check to pay them both. Correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So my suspicious mind goes, well, why wouldn't the designer give us a design that ups the cost of the whole project so that
everybody gets more money? And where are the checks and balances in place to make sure that we're getting value and we're not just getting expensive stuff because it's a really neat and cool design?
Right. So there's a couple of key points there. So we have our own expert architect that helps us with the process, aside from our own small amount of expertise. They can't really build really expensive prices because then it doesn't pencil out. So there's a certain finance component, so it has to be able to pay for itself. It has to meet all this criteria in order to actually qualify for a project. So they can come to us with this beautiful design, but if it doesn't finance and pencil out and pay for itself,
so we give them the financial parameters within which they have to work.
And price and budget is part of your RFP process. It's part of how you're evaluating contracts.
So you kind of confine them in a box that you create before you get them, mm-hmm. and then they have to work within that box. They're very good at working in that box, but by the same token, we need to have some oversight about how creative they get, because we don't want them to get it too creative and give us something that's perhaps not up to standard.
Okay. Thank you.
Cindy.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk about the timeline for just a second and ask a quick question. So as I'm looking at this timeline, this is basically a design and build timeline.
True.
So this is just
true.
One little piece of the larger question.
That's right.
At the larger project. So I don't know if it exists, but maybe we could at some point have designed and see the larger timeline, which would include governance, which would include financing,
right.
which would include community engagement, so we could see all the different pieces that are moving forward, realizing this is just the construction
subset.
This
is catered tonight towards us seeking direction,
getting some direction moving forward.
We can certainly fill in a Gantt chart in terms of what those other items are that have
right.
to be flushed out.
And I forget where in the governance calendar that might be, but it's something going forward we might look at.
Okay. Deb?
I think you answered it, but it's a follow-up on Patty's question. I just want to clarify that your question was answered, that the governance... We're governing up until the point that they put the keys in the door, right?
True.
So we're governing the construction, the finance, and the selection of the management firm.
That's right.
And you'll also have some say in the kind of final covenants that get decided, agreements about how we're going to manage, to give direction for that. We'll pass that management off to someone else. But you'll have input into, you'll finalize what that looks like.
Right.
And then, first of all, it'll always be a contractor to the district,
mm-hmm.
the property manager.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Patty?
So, Devin, you've presented these two, and we've heard a bit about it. Can you tell me about what you've seen in risk? And then we talk about foxes and hen houses, and, nothing nefarious, but things happen. And so we've got a lot of irons in the fire. We have the students we're looking out for. We answer to our constituents, the taxpayers, the parents. We now have a $200 million bond project with lots and lots going on. And then we'll be moving forward for this. All good work. What sort of risk have you seen? What type of real problems? Because you may have just, that should be enough of that question, and then I'll have a follow-up.
Sure. As I mentioned, K-12 school districts have not used this model significantly, although I'm seeing that change. So I think about design-build in the same box almost with lease-leaseback, because community colleges don't use lease-leaseback very much. They use design-build, and K-12s are the opposite. But in both cases, you're dealing with a more of a team approach, contractor and architect in the same room early on. And I contrast that with design bid build, where the architect and the contractor come into the process, they come together late in the process. When you have contractors bid the project, they may have had a few weeks. Anecdotally, again, sorry to be using that word, but in my career, in the 15 or so years I've spent doing this kind of thing, the disputes that districts versus contractors go to court over delay, over defects, that kind of thing, they tend to happen on design-bid-build projects. they tend to happen when you don't have that collaboration aspect. I do find that these leaseback or design build projects tend to yield fewer disputes because there's more collaboration earlier on. Now, there are always questions about are you paying an elevated price, and that's a very difficult thing to assess because you can't, you know, run it through test cases at the same time. You know, what would this be if I bid it? What would this be if I awarded it through one of these two models? But in terms of disputes, in terms of change orders, over time, in my experience, I see leaseback and design build yielding fewer change orders and fewer disputes.
Mm-hmm.
You always have the boxes and penthouses. I like that a lot. You know, there's questions, and you need to have good people keeping track of what the expenditures are and where there are overruns, where there are defects. But I think there are ways to control that through the contract.
Okay, and so then in the contract, should the board want, we could have specified audits and internal controls listed so that the public would be behind our movement.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, in the progress payment schedule, we've already provided Pat and Trevor with, you know, our firm's design build contract that provides a lot of those checks and balances.
Are we prepared to give direction?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's asking is if the design build model is something the board is comfortable with us pursuing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So nods?
Yeah, I am.
Or thumbs up? Yeah. Okay. Sounds like it.
Can I just ask though, Pat, since we have so many different types of presentations, that all of our presentations have a time stamp on each page. And that when we say this timeline update, Cindy helped point out that it was for the design and build phase, not the entirety of the project. That really helps when I go back to reference.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I add one last thing? I like the design and build model. I'm particularly interested call it prefab or pre-design, or call it modular units, and I think that if possible, we should be looking at least in that
direction. There's some beautiful structures out there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Can we introduce
you?
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we have our first interim report.
Okay. So, quick update for you on the first interim. We'll take a look tonight. The data we captured for tonight in these slides is the variances that we're looking at between the adopted budget and our first payment budget. We'll go through a little bit about revenues and expenditures, and we'll talk about some of the components that of each of these items. And we had a good discussion last night with the Financial Advisory Committee. We went through that in a lot of detail, so thanks for folks who were there last night. So this goes into positive certifications. Certified the district will be able to meet its financial obligations for the current and subsequent two fiscal years, and that our first interim was self-certified as positive. Okay, first interim adjustments. We captured for you here adjustments in each of these different sources, the LCFF, federal programs, state programs, and then local revenue sources. And on the LCFF component of this, recall that last year, after our board adopted our budget, the governor made some changes to the funding. And the change was, it's a good thing longer term for us, but there was a decrease in one-time funds, which you see in this reduction in the state funding. And there was an increase in our LCFF money. It went from a 3% growth to a 3.7% growth. And so we have an adjustment on our LCFF part of the calculation. That's what some of this adjustment is as a first interim. There's also some property tax adjustment numbers that are built into this as well. And we talk about this adjustment on the basic aid side of our calculation. So we've got some of that property tax growth built into the LCFF sources. The federal programs, we'll walk through those on the next slide. And the local revenue sources, we'll talk about some of those components too on the next slide. And then we'll work it too. Okay. So I talked about the LCFF sources. And then on the federal program side, Chris, you had a correction from me last night that I didn't capture yet in the slides, I believe.
It was corrected.
It is correct. Well, thank you. So this itemizes freely adjustments on the federal program side. And rather than reading all those, we've made these adjustments on the federal revenues. State programs, you'll see that first bullet on here is the decrease in the one-time money, the one-time discretionary funds, $1.1 million, offset by some increases in some other funds for the current year. So we're weaving these into our revenue adjustments for the current year. And then on the local revenue side, we captured for you some other adjustments here, too. Things such as the MOUs we have with other districts, an adjustment of $350,000. Facility use fees, we've breathed into the budget the facility use fees adjustments for the current year. The donations piece, we had some discussion about this last night, too. These donation adjustments are inclusive of donations we've received the current year, as well as making a slight adjustment to the donations overall we anticipate receiving this current year. We've got the SELPA 8602 revenue pass-through of $232,000 and some other small bill items, the workers' comp, safety grant, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line, I'm sorry, Chris, you say something?
Yeah, the SELPA, the county corrected what our projected costs were, so that's where that adjusts, because we got information from them that said it's going to cost less than we had projected.
Yeah, Chris and I went back to the county and asked them for that clarification, and they made that adjustment in terms of what our revenue source is going to be. I asked Greg this on the parcel tax. You see here there's adjustments, Measure O. These are associated with additional, senior exemptions as part of this decrease in funds, but the other adjustments are built in here for the parcel taxes. Okay? So overall, net adjustment to the revenue side. And then we'll walk through some of the expenditures here, too.
Well, I'm sorry, did you say decrease? So more people had opted out, and we have an increase in the revenues?
Measure O, I'm showing Patty, and Greg can correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, it was a decrease.
Yeah, Measure O is a decrease. I'm sorry.
So that is a decrease.
Sorry. Yeah, that's
I'm sorry, I didn't see it in red.
Okay. On the expenditure side, just process-wise, what we talked about last night, too, so you know, when we look at our first interim budget, what we're looking at is what happened when we closed the books. And was there any carryover in our budget from the prior year? And then we weave that into the expenditures for the current year. So in our books and supplies category here, and our services and other operating expenditures, we've got an increase in these costs. We had carryover in excess of about $3 million from the prior year. And recall when we looked at that ending balance, there was some unrestricted and restricted dollars in carryover. So these books and supplies numbers here and services and other operating expenditures are adjusted, largely associated with that carryover we had, and we talked through that in detail in prior meetings too. That's a big change. The last item on here, the transfers out, is $217,000. Recall we talked about the food services program. We looked at a multiple-year trend on the food services operation, and what we've adjusted in the first interim is an average of what we've seen that contribution be over the past several years. We had in our budget a $517,000 line item for the contribution for the food service operation. After we did some review of a five-year trend, the five-year trend shows a $300,000 contribution. So we made an adjustment in terms of our expenditures, a decrease in terms of that contribution to the food services fund by that $217,000. Okay. Other items we have on tonight, the AB 1200 and the tentative agreements, and thanks to Mike for your really kind comments earlier tonight, too. This is reflective to our adjustments for salaries and benefits associated with the agreements we have. Other adjustments in here, too, the standard things we do at first interim, we're looking at the final placement folks have who we've hired before we place them on the salary schedule. We're looking at the open enrollment for our health and welfare benefits, and so that adjustment is woven into these expenditure numbers here as well, too, okay, for salaries and benefits. Okay, so pretty standard stuff we're doing there. Okay, this slide shows you the difference between the adopted budget and then the first interim budget, and what we're looking at is this ending fund balance here. And we're also looking at this surplus and this deficit line that's here in terms of what we want from the adopted budget to this number here, which is the deficit which we're projecting now. At the beginning, you'll see we had this difference in our beginning fund balance, and I spoke to that a while ago too, about how we went from when we finished closing the books last year, recall we went from the estimated actuals to our unaudited actuals, and we had a $5 million variance plus in our ending balance, and so our beginning fund balance is adjusted by that dollar amount there. And then the difference in this deficit we're calling out here as a first interim, a large part of this deficit is inclusive of the carryover from the prior year being now budgeted as being spent in the current year, okay? And so
spent what?
Spent in the current year, Sheila. So when you have carryover, we roll that carryover into the current year, and so we show that overall expenditures are increasing by the carryover, and similarly, your deficit for the current year is inclusive of anticipating spending those dollars, okay? And so what we talked about last night and talked about tonight a little bit too is that this number here, in terms of this deficit, we have seen, and I've seen since I've been here too, we've seen this fluctuation in terms of what that deficit number is. We have been spending time with both our principals this year and with our directors as well, too, because we want to make sure that we get closer and closer to what we believe the final costs are going to be for the current year. And as we get closer to that estimated actual in May, we want to make sure that we are we're getting as close as possible to that dollar amount. So what we've instituted this year is we're meeting with principals multiple times this year. We already had a first round with principals. We have another round now that first interim is completed. We have another round of meeting scheduled principals to look at those dollars inclusive of the prior year carryover and the current year allocation so we get closer and closer to this number so we get closer and closer to what we believe our estimated actual expenditure to be and look at our fund balance. But the way that this may fluctuate is that if this deficit, if not all those expenditures are incurred in the current year, then our ending fund balance will be modified by whatever is not spent of this dollar amount which we anticipate. And similarly, what will happen is that your reserve, your ending fund balance is adjusted by whatever that reserve is adjusted by. This, ultimately, this undesignated amount here that's called out in this category would increase. If your expenditures are less than what we anticipate, then this undesignated amount would go up. And ultimately, this unrestricted reserve percentage would go up. And we certainly have seen over the years that fluctuation in this district. We've made an effort to make sure that we're having those conversations. We need to have further conversations with folks, too, as we meet multiple people this year, multiple times this year, so that we're focusing on those percentages. Okay? The next slide is talking about what's on the horizon. The governor's budget proposal is in January for the upcoming year. We'll do our second interim report in March, and then there's the governor's main remarks. The recommended board action for tonight is that you approve the 18-19 first report with a positive certification, and knowing that we'll have additional revisions will occur at second interim. Okay,
Pat.
Can you go back a slide, please?
Sure.
There we go.
Yep.
So, thank you for the work. And I know that our finance department has been, you know, we've changed quite a bit. And I'm wanting for the board to consider that as we approve this adopted budget, we have a fluctuation in a beginning balance fund of almost $6 million. I want to know where that's coming from. And I know we've had some explain out. You may have inherited some problems, but I'd like to propose that we accept this budget with the caveat of having an independent audit. Somebody come in and tell us where we stand. And if we have these internal controls and best practices so that we won't have a budget brought to us on late June, that changes within 60 days. I think it would be prudent just to get the community behind us to know that we're doing our due diligence around this and to also help the staff see what practices may be causing some of the problems that they may have inherited as you just had moved into this position a couple of years ago, and you have a newer staff and changing people, but I'm just hoping the board will consider that.
Thank you, Patty. Anybody else like to speak? Jeremy?
So, if I'm hearing, my concern on the budget is within those 60 days you talked about from essentially July 1st until September 1st, we had a $5.8 million change. And then a few months later, we discovered that that number needed to be revised by a million or so dollars. And so what you're asking for an audit from an outside agency. One simply hires someone for an audit.
Yeah, they're usually standard practice. They can be. And just with to help better understand our internal controls, that would help that department not come to these conclusions and then have such a change so quickly. This wasn't just a huge revenue windfall or a large deficit piece, but should this have been in the opposite direction, we would have been in quite a bit of trouble. And as we move forward with committing to the bargaining units, I think it would just be good practice.
I think the item tonight is to approve this. I think it's something we could discuss when we do our
well, I can make the motion to approve with the caveat of having an independent audit for this last year, so ending in 17-18, not just the Crown Whore app, but one that shows us our internal controls and our best practice for this. How did we get here and why? And then what can we do in the department to help support that you have what you need so that we're not at this? But I'd like to just know where we stand.
I hear you. Okay, Deb?
My recollection is we did have a conversation about this as a topic for our governance. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious as to how this would affect like a timeline in terms of the budget process versus an RFQ and RFP for an auditing firm for this budget. Like, I just wanted, I don't know if there's, I'm not inclined to vote one way or the other at the moment, but I just would like to point out that we have had that conversation that we might put this on, or we have decided to put it on governance discussion. But I just don't understand how it might affect the timeline for moving forward for the obligations that we have.
Hey, Pat, may I speak?
Oh, about which component?
Well, about why there was this fluctuation.
I can explain why. Well, I think, Greg,
I think it'd be a good idea.
I'm thinking that, I'm sorry.
That's a no.
Great. I think we'll take it once you start.
Because we have the same problem in today's budget. It's a budget. All right. If anybody would like to know, please let me explain that to them. I've asked several times a year. There is a reason.
Well, I think the item before us tonight is approval of this budget, and we can have a further conversation regarding practice and process in the future. I think it's a worthy conversation. If Patty wants to make that motion, she can make the motion, and if it passes, it passes, but if it doesn't, it doesn't. But the item tonight is just to pass this particular presentation, correct?
Right. That's the recommendation to approve the first interim.
So we did agree to put this on as a topic for our governance session. So it's on my list of items that were brought forward. And if you want to make a motion tonight that we take next steps in addition to that right now, we can. But yes, tonight before us is the adoption of the first interim budget.
Cindy, go ahead.
That's okay. Just in regarding budget review, we do have an annual audit from an outside firm, is that correct? When does that come to us?
January.
In January? So we'll have our official auditors here and the book and the findings?
Yes.
And then also in terms of county oversight, it seems to me we talked about county oversight of the budget. When and how does that happen? Or is it, if there's not a simple answer, then we can look at that further.
Our first interim is submitted to them.
Right.
They just reviewed all the AB 1200s that we've submitted, and they've approved all those, reviewed our budgets in conjunction with our bargaining unit agreements. Do you want to add to?
No, I think you captured it, Chris. They review it. Yeah, the county reviews those. Each of those, their obligation is to review those budgets, and their obligation is to review the AB 1200s presented to them as well.
And go ahead, Chris.
And they're reviewing this first interim.
They're reviewing it.
True.
And in a governance session, would it be possible to have another voice at the table, maybe from the county, if we had some questions?
Sure. We had Jean Gardner, and she's been on
here from a different point of view, different level of critical eye.
Jean Gardner, who's with the county office, she was there last night. She's been on the budget advisory committee she's at the budget advisory for 12 years.
Okay.
She's looked over the district's budget for years too. Has seen some of the trends, seen some of the challenges. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Sheila was next. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess I just wanted to check with Patty, with all of you about this. My thinking about looking into the idea of having an outside person who audited it was an idea that stood by itself, regardless of what had happened in the last year or two on our budget, but rather, is it just a good idea? Is it a good administrative idea? So that's why I was comfortable with doing it as part of the governing session, because to me it's just a policy question. It's not what happened this year question, which I always like to know because I'm always the kind of person so likes to know these things. But it's that it has more to do with just, is this worth it to us or not? Mm-hmm. So I guess I just wanted to say that because,
Okay, and
that seemed to be the direction you were going.
And Jeremy.
I'm confused, and that's okay. I support Patty's idea for a one-off, independent, outside audit. It's logical. There was a large discrepancy, and then things happened, negotiations and so on, and there was another discrepancy. It would be logical to just one time go outside of our county office and our regular reviewer to look at things. They may bring they may bring sets of fresh eyes to it. And it's not a topic that the board shouldn't be taking up. It's under our jurisdiction. So I think we should do that. So then the question is, should we debate and talk about that and add that as a resolution to passing the first interim, or can we wait to the governing session? So I have a clarifying question. When is that governing session?
January.
Next month.
I'm okay with waiting to the governing session and passing this cleanly, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I would like to have that on the governing session. I think it's logical to have that discussion.
It's going
to
be on there. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you for all weighing in. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to have had this conversation and to assure the public that it's coming and all those involved. And I am a little bit uncomfortable when I hear Mr. Tour say that it's continued, but we shall take it on there. And I would hope everybody would come with their ideas of what they'd most like to see, where their confusion stems from when being presented these numbers. I think it's just healthy for the district. Thank you.
Okay, it's an action item. Are there comments from the public? Okay, motion? I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
AC Carlson speaking for the Federation. We just had a question. I can't believe we've gone through this, so this isn't about the person. It's just about the idea of the independent audit I'm not speaking for or against it, but as we heard you discussing, we didn't hear anyone say what the cost would be and if that mm-hmm. money comes out of general fund. So I hope as you consider that at the governance session, mm-hmm. you'll find out what an estimated cost would be mm-hmm. and where those funds would come from.
Thank you. Now a motion.
I move approval to adopt the first interim budget.
Thanks.
Second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Our next item is new business. It's the district technology contract.
Trevor.
Okay. Come up to the podium for this one. This is important. So as you all know, we've been looking at and talking about for a very long time putting together a new district network that is stable and supports our educational program in an appropriate manner. As part of the bond process, that has been a targeted item. So recently, we got a hurry-up call in trying to make that happen with the whole tariff situation between China and all the electronics manufacturers. Hence, we did a little bit of a hurry-up offense. We reached out to five qualified contractors who qualify based on their ability to purchase, to provide us with purchase materials and consultation and implementation labor under a program called CMAS. They all basically have already bid on government contracts of this nature. So we selected five quality contractors that were somewhat close to us, had some semblance of familiarity with the district because we have this time situation going on. Of the five we contacted, three were able to meet with us within a three-week time window. So we met with three of them, Curtis Gomez, your IT director, Pat Daphne, and myself. Curtis had called his counterparts at both Pajaro and the county, and he tried to get a principal. We tried to get a group of five. That was our goal. And we just couldn't get anybody to meet the schedule, unfortunately. So the three of us did it. We interviewed the three candidates. We scored them using the same process we've been using for architects and other professional consultants. And we selected this company, DGI. They're familiar with our sites. They're technically more than qualified to do the project, and they have actually been helping us over the last week or so prepare a preliminary document to actually place an order for some of this equipment to beat the January 1st deadline. A Herculean effort right away. The one was pretty darn amazing. So that's in a short, brief period exactly what's happened and how we get to where we are now. Hoping you will approve DGI as our technology consultant and partner.
Questions? Go ahead, Cindy.
Could you clarify for me, and I've read this, but it's still not real clear to me, in terms of the $4 million, what that really gets us in terms of comparing consultant services and equipment acquisition? I don't see where those meld.
Under the CMAS process, they bid cabling and equipment and consulting and install labor is all under that one umbrella. Since we don't have a fleshed-out plan yet, we don't know exactly what the pieces are, so how much is labor, how much is the switch, and how much is the cable. What we have is kind of an estimate based on a collaborative effort of collecting information about what we need, where we need it, and how much we need.
But the $4 million includes
the $4 million
that
is
stuff
a
as well
data
as
network.
Services.
Correct.
Thank you.
It doesn't necessarily include some of the things that we haven't discussed with them yet. We have parts in our modernization plans for TVs or projectors. We have parts where we're talking about some safety items with speaker systems that are interactive. This supports that, but it isn't that. Does that make sense?
More of the infrastructure.
This is the network that supports any of those things that we want to have.
Okay, thank you.
But currently what it will support directly is our Wi-Fi networks, our plug-in LANs and WANs, so that all our computers and our testing and all that stuff works seamlessly.
Okay.
Patty?
I know that there's not an absolute for a tariff or not, so that would be wonderful to know, but I do appreciate the thought of planning ahead. Can you tell me when the price sheets change? So, you know, if the pricing isn't reviewed for, what is the time frame on that before I can?
So January 1st is when the tariffs hit. We have to place our order prior to that. So we have to have a purchase order in place and the order placed prior to January 1st.
Should there be tariffs?
Should there be tariffs. Unfortunately for us, it takes a number of days to get a PO organized. It took us a couple of weeks to get this package organized. We then have to place an order, get it approved. So there's times, and we sort of stopped doing business on the 21st.
And then the next question is, has anybody in the immediate group worked with DGI before?
In the immediate group, no. Only in a consulting basis, as in when they did some preliminary work developing a vision for what the system should do and look like, but they didn't do any planning.
Okay, and then last follow-up, if that's okay. Do we have a tech plan still? I know we had gotten a tech group, and I want to make sure that the commitment for what we're purchasing into actually meets the need to the tech recommendations. That's where I'm a little bit confused for the hurry up.
Do you want to discuss that? I mean, it's in process. I mean, you're looking at maybe some part of the tech team, but you probably know the timeline better in terms of the plan.
Chris and Verona, we have it down for January or
February?
February.
So we do have a plan, and basically the infrastructure, we can't have a plan without infrastructure. I mean, it's the less interesting parts of the tech plan.
This is more like putting the sewer pipes and the water pipes in the ground, but we haven't picked the spigot colors and styles yet. That the tech plan will help us flesh that out. What we're actually proposing now is that support network to all those things.
And so that's the cornerstone to it. And the tech plan draft, just so you know, with a lot of help from Julia and Marianne and other folks too, and Dorothy, we've taken a plan, I think, of like 65 pages. It's down to about 12. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of excess stuff in there. So we've kind of consolidated that. We've got some input, and we have some next steps planned to solicit some more feedback from our tech task force, and we plan to bring it back to you in February.
And I would add, the tariff thing doesn't change who we would be using. All it does is change the fact we're trying to do a little bit of a hurry up on this purchase order of a significant portion of the equipment. It won't be 100% accurate. This is hopefully 90% of what we need to avoid that possible 25% cut.
Okay, Phoebe.
Can you help me understand what equipment we need to hurry up and purchase to
so
avoid the tariff?
It's all the switches. So everything that where the cables all plug in, all those black boxes that go in the racks and stuff, all of those things, which some of them cost thousands of dollars each, and we have literally thousands of them that we have to buy to spread out all over the district. So all of those, all the Wi-Fi devices, so all the things you see poked up on the walls, every one of those, all the racks and equipment to support that, routers, battery backup systems. Literally we have nearly $300,000 just on battery backup systems. What else?
You tell the cabling too?
Not the cable. Cabling, you need way too much design to go there. We wouldn't save a whole lot.
And can I ask one follow-up? A lot of this equipment is already planned for the modernization and the tech infrastructure in the facilities. Mm-hmm. Or is it somehow separate from that?
It's separate from that. This is all technology equipment. It's not part of the construction process. Some of the construction process is to provide infrastructure for this technology.
For that equipment.
Like electrical and air conditioning, clean spaces. Because that's one of the other things. We're trying to get this technology out. It sounds strange. We're trying to get it out of the classroom. The new high-speed switches are very noisy and give off a lot of heat. Mm-hmm. Unlike the old dumb ones that sit in the corner and you don't really know they're there. These ones buzz. But that's how you get this super high-speed, stable internet.
So that's what the facilities is paying for, getting that stuff outside.
Facilities is paying for the rooms and the air conditioning, and yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And just one more follow-up, because I'm always a little bit confused about how quickly this might become obsolete to hurry up and spend $4 million. So what has the review been for that and the work to know?
So Curtis's work for many years continually updating to the latest and greatest, not necessarily the leading edge, but really up against the leading edge. And the group we're with, the president of the company, actually sits on the Cisco board, he sits on the Meraki board, he sits on some other... He's so connected to these high-end tech companies, he knows that subtle difference, and so he's helped update our plan, our ideas a little bit, and Curtis has been with him every step of the way and sort of validating that. So we are getting as state-of-the-art as we can get without getting something that's untrue, untried, I should say.
And just to follow up then, are you thinking that we can count on this for a decade?
So the typical lifespan of this, according to the tech geeks, is 5 to 7 years. However, I'll interject on that. Given what we're doing now, this should be good for at least 10 years through our middle schools, and depending on technologies and what they do, it could easily be 10 for a high school, or it might not. Video compression and stuff like that may mean this is good forever now, other than the equipment wears out. Well, that's highly unlikely, because every time they compress it more, we can design better systems to make it better. So crystal balling, I would hope we get 10 years out of it, but 5 to 7 is what they tell us is the typical lifespan of this type of technology, as far as true high-end effectiveness. Equipment, hopefully, will last longer than that.
Any comments from the public? Oh, do we have a motion?
Move approval of the contract.
Second.
Deedee and Deb? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstain? 7-0. Okay, our next new business item is the proposal at Bayview, De La Viega, and B40 Small Schools, new buildings.
Trevor?
I'm so excited.
Hey, no, you're not true.
Fireplace. Yes. So we've talked about this quite a bit. I was curious about these new buildings that are coming at these different sites. So Enviroplex, we're using their piggyback system. We're buying on somebody else's bids. They can now meet our timelines. They've been working with our architects. So they're providing us DSA, pre-approved DSA buildings with finishes that match our requirements at each of our sites. Each site is slightly different because they have different architecture and a different feel, so we're adjusting the way the buildings look accordingly. They are quite similar. Structures or identical finishes are similar, but not the same. The Enviroplex is our part in this process, and this is to purchase the buildings and get them started.
Okay, Jeremy?
How many at each site at what approximate cost?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember the cost per site, but there is, I believe it's 5 classrooms at Bayview, 6 classrooms at De La Viega. There's 6, I think, in the initial phase of B40 Small Schools, and then an additional 5 for the second phase for AFE.
And the reason then that Bayview's a little bit more expensive, even though there are fewer classrooms, is just logistics?
There's some differences in what we put in them based on their needs. They have, and I'm trying to remember what those are.
That's
gone round and round, so many different options. But yes, there are subtle differences in each other.
Life expectancy about 20 years, if we're lucky.
Life expectancy should be close to 50 and beyond. These are very different from what you're used to when you're talking modular. I mean, these are full concrete foundations, full concrete floors. full stucco walls, so they have everything that I can build on the site. Building does, other than instead of 12 months of construction on the site, you have a couple, 3 months and you're done. Good news is also from a funding standpoint, although the state could change that any day, but if history stays similar and we move along in a similar fashion, funding for modernization is every 25 years on a stick-built building. It's every 20 years for a modular building. With modernization money, you don't get enough to replace a stick-built building. You only get basically 40% of the rebuild cost. That's the maximum you can go to if you're eligible. With the modular construction, if you skip that 20-year cycle and you get to 50 years, you get enough money to actually just replace it with brand new. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, there's an advantage to it, other than obviously when you look at a Santa Cruz High, it's been there 100 years, and you get modernization every 25, so you've had four rounds. There's arguments both ways, but given the budgetary constraints, this seems like a very clever approach to providing quality conscience.
Talk to you in 2068.
Check that. Hey, Patty.
I'm sorry, I should have asked this prior, but do you have any photos from the Willows District that Murdoch Elementary School that we're making the piggyback purchase off of to see what these buildings look like?
We are not matching their architectural finishes. We're only buying their structural PC. So our finishes will be different.
So Mark had shared some photos at his last presentation of the single-story modulars. We can send those out, though.
Out. That would just be nice to have.
There's some great websites to check out.
Yeah, I just want to have a visual for it. Thank you.
And we're very close to actually having some very nice 3D renderings of how those will actually look, too, so we can get those to you fairly soon as well.
Okay. Comments from the public? This is an action item. Is there a motion?
Move for adoption. Approve and proposal.
Cindy moves.
Thank you.
Second.
And Sheila seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
All right. Now we're going to close the meeting and open a public hearing on AB 1200 for SCCS, SCCCE tentative agreement.
Yes, Mr. Chair, are you open to the public?
So, are there any comments from the public? Anyone here to speak? Okay, we'll close the public hearing, and the next item is this action item.
Yeah, we're recommending to you approval of each of the AB 1200s that are brought to you tonight. The county has reviewed these and has approved each of them. It shows that we can afford the agreement that we reached for the current year and the next two fiscal years.
Questions? Motion?
I'm in approval.
Second.
Deb and Sheila?
Thank you.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Is this for 2.5 all the way through? Or did we just do that in one? I should have asked that first.
We got the
hearing. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the next. Meeting and open a public hearing for AB 1200 for SCCS and GSCFT tentative agreement. Anyone like to speak on that? Close the public hearing and the next item.
Same, county has reviewed this and has approved it. So we're going to approve.
Questions? Motion?
Second.
Okay. Deb and Cindy. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
Close the meeting and open a public hearing on AB 1200 for the SCCS Management Confidential Tentative Agreement. Anyone here who would like to speak on this? Close the public hearing and
recommend approval.
Any questions? Okay. Motion?
Move approval.
I'll second.
Cindy and Deb. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
business.
Yeah, I would. I know. Got stuck in those.
Personnel commissions.
Yeah, personnel commissions.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. We have a staff report on the personnel commission report.
At this point, I'd like to invite Kenny Hauser, our director of classified personnel, to come forward.
Thank you.
Every year, we do, we're required and enjoy doing a report from our personnel commission. And so I welcome Kenny today to, or to Susan, to kind of give you an update on the commission and what's been happening in that department.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Okay, I put this together. In the past, it's been a trifold little thing. And this time, I looked at some others, how other districts have done it. It's a little different format for this year's annual report. First, I defined a merit system. When I was applying for this job, there was a lot of talk about merit systems, and I had to look it up and research before I went to an interview. Basically, it's just a method of personnel management that works to ensure that employees are hired based on merit, that it's and merit just it's the best person for the job. I'll go into that later. And a little history of it. Back in 1936 was the first merit system law, and it was a lawsuit filed against Los Angeles Unified School District, where 700 employees were fired the day after new school, board members came on. So there was this big uproar, and they said, you know what, you can't do that. We need rules in place to make sure that people are hired not just based on who you know. I tell, as applicants come in and test them, I tell them a little bit about this. I say, because applicants will come in, and I know some of them. I've been a part of the district for over 10 years, and so I'm a friendly person. So I'll say, hi, welcome, how are you? And they'll come and sit, and then the other applicants think, I'm screwed. I don't get this job. But it's based on this merit, so that doesn't happen. That's to ensure that it doesn't happen. Santa Cruz City Schools got its merit system in 1967. It was voted in. Right now, about almost 60% of all classified school employees in the state of California are part of a merit system. So it's not just us. Locally, it's just us and Pajaro Valley within and the county office. But it is something that exists within California, Los Angeles Unified being a big portion of that. The Personnel Commission. The Personnel Commission, we meet monthly, establishes and enforces rules to make sure that it's fair. Just to make sure that it's fair, that we're selecting the people based on merit and it's fairness, promoting people the same way. And also, it ties into retaining employees as well. They're an independent body appointed for 3 years. And the independent nature of a Personnel Commission, I often explain that we aren't, I'm not a district employee. I work really closely with human resources, and we're lucky that we have such a collegial work together relationship. We're not in a separate building, and in other districts it can be very contentious. So I'm grateful for that. It's almost, the lines aren't, the other people don't see those lines. They don't even know. However, we're independent from the union and the district, so sometimes I'll tell employees, we're like the third party. I know all of this. I know what's happening, but we strive to be the third party. Here are our current members. And, for example, Mark Violante is currently the chair, and he's been on the board, or on the commission for, I forget how many years, but I'll say 8 or 9. And so people re-up. You can serve for 3 years and then you come back. And they are appointed. One is appointed by the board. One is appointed by the union. And the other is appointed jointly. However, they strive to be neutral. So just because they're appointed by the board doesn't mean that they always check in with Molly. And in fact, they're not supposed to. That neutral body. highlights of 17-18, which is what I'm here to just give the annual report of what we've been up to, and I know that there's been a lot. It was a busy year, so this is last year. We got a new personnel assistant, or human resource specialist is now. Her name's Denise Grogan. She comes to us. Jory was promoted to work with human resources, and we were sad to lose him. And in his place came Denise, who also has some of his skills as far as technology is concerned and computer skills, which turns out is just so helpful for this position and for us moving forward, for us to be a presence on Twitter, a presence on Instagram, and getting employees in. Also, just a very hard worker, and we work really well together. It's been a great addition. Classification study was our big thing, and thank you so much for that. Classification and compensation study. Studied 79 jobs. All salaries were brought to at least the median level as part of the salary study. And it was completed in January. One thing that I am proud of is when I was researching other districts or talking to them about studies, about how do you do this, how do you go through it, who do you hire to do this, it's not uncommon for districts or for personnel commissions to do studies and for them to sit on the shelf and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Or they can't get anything to happen because the board won't do anything, or there's this crisis with the union and it just sits there and they say, well, that was just a waste of money and time. I can say that we did not do that. In fact, we moved really fast. We got a lot done, and I'm really, really proud. And we are, and thank you. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of us. And we still are using it. We're still looking at that report. It's not as much as we were back in January, but we're still using it. We still have it as that document. The other highlight of this past year is just improved data collection. With Jory's help and now Denise's help, better tracking methods. When I got this position, and there had been several directors before me, a lot of turnover several years. So as far as where did these numbers come from, or what happened in the past? How do we know? Instead of looking through, and the resource was just looking through physical binders and physical minutes, and nothing was on the computer. So really building systems and it's getting better and better. I feel like this is my third year, my third annual report, and I feel in a way that we've kind of arrived. There's certain things that I just saw happening in the report. You saw that list of the data, and I really look forward to having 5 years back. And what's the normal number of hires that we do every year? What's average? This seems like a lot, just to have the data to look back on and reflect on. So with that, I'm open to questions.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I just wanted to say thanks for your hard work, and I really agree with you that we've got a lot done. It was exciting to see the classification study and to implement it. So thanks.
Hey, Patty.
Thank you. I echo those sentiments, and I do think it has really helped with a collaborative spirit amongst the whole workforce to have this, and that they know that they have an avenue to speak, to say that perhaps the job description as was does not necessarily meet current day needs. And I'm really happy to see that. I've been following it since I became a member on the board, and I'm very thankful that you're at the helm and to hear that you're working so closely and separately from all. And I'd like to also hope that you would pass to your commissioners a special thanks on behalf of me for the work they do, because it is time out of their day on a volunteer basis to ensure that this methodology happens for their community and the students. So thank you.
And thank you for the report. Okay. No action on this item. Our next item is the tentative agreement for SCCS.
So tonight, in conjunction with the ED1200, I bring forward to you a tentative agreement with our classified union, SCCCE, for approval.
Do we have questions? comments from the public? Motion?
So moved.
Okay, Cindy?
Second.
And Sheila seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0. And our next item is the tentative agreement for SCCS, GSCFT.
So I bring forth a tentative agreement for with our GSCFT bargaining unit for approval this evening.
Questions? Comments from the public? Motion?
Move approval.
Patty moves approval.
I'll second.
And Deb seconds.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0. And our next item is the Sunshine articles for GSCFT.
So as we wrap up 17-18, we bring you 18-19 Sunshine articles. Bring forward the articles from GSCFT, which they have sunshine for negotiations for 2018-19 to Santa Cruz City Schools. I bring forward an approval.
Questions? Comments from the public? Motion?
Move approval.
Patty moves approval.
Second.
And Sheila seconds.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
So in that vein, to keep negotiations moving, I bring forward to you SCCS's Sunshine Articles to GSCFT for approval.
Okay, comments or questions? Comments from the public? Motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, Cindy and Patty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
May I ask a simple question before we go on? In terms of the management confidential, so we did, for that group, we did a public hearing and an AB 1200, but we don't need a final action.
We don't have contracts.
We don't have contracts. So it's just assumed it just goes into place without having to approve any.
There's no contract that exists.
No
yeah.
Okay,
good question.
Out of order, maybe.
That's okay. Our next item is the CSBA Delegate Assembly nominations.
So now is the time of year that the board may choose to nominate a board member to the CSBA Delegate Assembly within Region 9, the term beginning April 9th. Through March 31st.
But to be clear, let me just add that if we're not talking about Ms. Tracy Prue, she is not up for re-election. Her term is not over next year. So this would be someone from one of our neighbor districts, if we so choose.
I see.
Deb?
I just wanted to comment that George Wiley, who's been a longtime delegate mm-hmm. and is very involved countywide with school boards, is intending to reapply for his position. Mm-hmm. He's been named to the nominating committee for CSBA, so he'll be helping mm-hmm. vet people that will be, you know, vying for president and president-elect next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I would like to nominate George.
Okay.
He's done excellent work. I think he represents there, and he does a really good job of doing outreach across mm-hmm. The region. It doesn't always appear that way because, you know, our region is big, mm-hmm. but I know he does do a lot of work. And I'd also like to comment that there is a COE position that's opening up because the current person who is representing the COE spot for Region 9 just became president of her COE board, and it's complicated, but that will be a position opening up. There's also an opportunity to, I mean, I'm not, it's the first, I don't know if we get more, how many positions, it's not clear to me that in terms of nomination.
I don't know if you're limited uh-huh. how many people you can nominate, but I just know that nominations are due no later than January 7th, so if you don't have a person, yeah, if you don't do it tonight or have a person in mind for the COE, then you probably won't make that.
I guess in that position, unless someone has someone in mind, I mean, I do, but I don't want to put their name out without talking to them first, but just that you know, we may get, when we have the applications after the January, that there may be another person from our area, mm-hmm. from our COE board who would be interested in running for that spot.
So
I made a motion to nominate George Wiley to for
I second that.
That's good. Okay. Questions? in public. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? No, 7-0.
Thank you.
Our next item is the resolution for trustee area elections.
So it was great to be able to go to CSBA and learn a lot about this, mm-hmm. Because it came as new information to me in November when we received a letter of demand from an attorney about demanding we look at moving to trustee area elections. Kind of the history of the California Voting Rights Act. In 2002, it was signed into law. In 2005, it was ruled as unconstitutional, but in 2006, an appeals court overturned that decision. And beginning in 2006, there were many challenges began against school districts. In 2016 and 17, that focus shifted to cities, with some school districts as well. And in 2017, there were some changes to the processes, because the process that we're experiencing now and learning about, there were some big changes in the legislation around it. Under the Federal Voting Rights Act passed in 1965, a jurisdiction must fail 4 factual tests before it is found in violation of the law. The California VRA eliminates 2 of those 4 tests, making it easier for plaintiffs to force jurisdictions into bi-district elections. Liability is now determined only by the presence of racially polarized voting. Decision is based entirely on a statistical analysis, and when the demographer explained to us the statistical analysis, he says most judges don't even want to see it because it's very, very complex. It's not easy to demonstrate whether or not there is polarized voting or not. And oftentimes, because the statistical analysis is so complex, the judge just rules with whatever the precedent has been. And the precedent has been that every time that these are brought forward for litigation, the plaintiff prevails. Plaintiffs do not need to show any evidence of prejudice or discrimination. So this has been some significant change across the state as a result of this. Many districts are switching or in the process of switching. At least 170 school districts have switched, 28 community college districts, more than 100 cities, the County Board of Supervisors. There was only one that wasn't already electing by district, and it made the shift. And at least 15 water, health care, and other special districts, because this is being addressed in other special districts as well. The cost of fighting a California Voting Rights Act case. Modesto spent $1.8 million on a defense, Palmdale $2 million, Santa Monica $5 million, Santa Clara about $500,000. The settlements paid to the plaintiff's attorneys are outlined there. Just to have a sense of what the history has been in the state, how this has been impacting school districts. And right now, the city of Santa Monica, they're saying, they haven't publicly said yet, but the presenter says it's upward of $9 million that they've spent. So, districting process. A demand letter is received. We received ours on election day. The attorney sends a certified letter alleging a violation of the CVRA demanding a change in the elected system. The district has 45 days to adopt a resolution stating its intention to change its election system, or it can be sued by the plaintiff. There are 2 initial hearings held prior to the release of draft voting maps, and education to solicit input from the community. There's a release of draft maps, and there has to be at least 7 days prior to the third hearing, then the maps have to be presented. If we offer us another set of maps, there has to, again, be 7 days between the time the maps are presented and a hearing would be held on them. The final map is adopted, and then it goes before a county committee. And I'm sorry, I forgot to ask about this, exactly who sits on the county committee. I don't have that information yet, but I will work to get that. And then the State Board of Education, it's pretty much standard that they provide a waiver of a statutory requirement to hold an election on the maps. That they now, you get on their agenda ahead of time. If we move forward with this, we'd work pretty quickly to get on their agenda, so we would be prepared to get a waiver of having to hold a special election. I see some real opportunities for us. Those last slides were the CSBA slides. I see these as the opportunity for us. You know, if we move forward with a process like this, it creates opportunities for outreach and connection in our community, opportunities for conversation, opportunities to engage the community around governance in school districts. Community forums can facilitate both input on the districts, but we can also use that opportunity to get input on the LCAP while we're out and about and talking to people. And I also thought it would be a great time if the timelines are short, if I can get some student volunteers to go into the junior history classes and ask them for volunteers to participate in the process. We could have them trained by the demographers to help facilitate community meetings, get some of our bilingual students to help us with engaging with our Spanish-speaking parents. So an opportunity for student civic engagement as well if we move forward with the process. And this is a potential outreach approach for us. Identify our stakeholders inside and out. Do school site-based work up front. That's our easiest reach. Mm-hmm. Broaden the outreach. Go where people are as best we can, and that's where I think students could help us to do some work out in the community. Highlight multiple drafts of maps. Get multiple map possibilities where we can get lots of feedback. The demographer presented in the session we were in talked about having all kinds of maps, some that maybe even seem a little, you know, crazy in possibility, because it'll get some ideas from people that might help us inform a next draft that would get some ideas from the community. But so a few drafts that might create strong reactions and help narrow where we want to go. And overtly incorporate our community comments. We'll work to get that information up on the website, really let people know. This is all the feedback we've gotten. Collect that. The challenge around all this are the timelines. It's a 45-day timeline for this first part. And with some changes that I'll share with you in just a minute because of some information that we got last night from the plaintiff. And then our process from beginning to end after that 45-day timeline, after we commit our resolution, is 90 days, unless there's new legislation that's beginning January 1st. It could be 180 days if the plaintiff allows for that. So there's some different possibilities and factors that could change through the process. So there'll be public hearings, community open houses, community group presentations. Again, I think we could recruit some high school students to help facilitate that community input. That's the overall part of this. But I want to share with, you know, publicly share some information that came from the plaintiff last night. As you can see, you know, working to consider the intent resolution to move towards by trustee area elections. There was a new development that occurred yesterday that I'd like to present to the board. The attorney for the plaintiff in this matter graciously offered the district an extension of the legal deadline, which would allow the board to consider the intent resolution at our January 16th, 2019 board meeting. this extension would allow us to more meaningfully engage the public by moving the important issue to after the holidays and to after our winter break, because otherwise those first two meetings will have to occur during our winter break period. Therefore, the board has two options to consider. Tonight, we consider the intent resolution, or we can vote to table the item to our January 16th board meeting.
Okay, do we have questions or comments? Sheila and then Cindy.
Okay, I was going to ask one question, and then I wanted to ask a question about tabling the item. I was just trying to understand the idea that the plaintiffs don't need to show evidence of prejudice or discrimination, but it's assumed that the statistical analysis is an analysis of prejudice or discrimination, right? So in other words, the plaintiff doesn't need to show individual. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Well, I think they don't even have to prove it in the statistical analysis necessarily.
But they're not a plaintiff until there is this.
They can become a plaintiff if we don't have by trustee area elections, if we don't have district elections, they can state that we're violating the California Voting Rights Act. Voters' Rights Act, and
then somebody decides by statistical analysis, that somebody being a lawyer. Is that right?
Yeah, a lawyer would, if they brought forward a case that in the documents they came to us, there wasn't a very compelling argument in that packet that it was creating discrepancies, but it also said that it was an incomplete analysis, and that if it were to be brought forward for further litigation, they would be bringing more evidence to make their case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If people don't mind, I'd just like to. The second question was tabling it. We're choosing to table it. We're choosing to take the plaintiff up on the offer.
Yes.
To do exactly the same thing, but just to do it starting at a later date.
Extending the 45-day timeline. That's what the plaintiff has offered to do, is to extend that 45-day timeline to allow us more opportunity for meaningful community input.
Okay.
Okay. And Cynthia, then Didi.
Okay. Just to clarify, if we were to table it, then we would look at this resolution again on January 16th,
mm-hmm.
and then from that date would begin the 90-day period.
Correct.
That would allow us to do the public hearings and the community input and the community outreach in a more agreeable time frame in terms of not being in the holidays.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
And Dee?
I appreciate that you're looking at this as an opportunity for us to not only engage the community, but also to maybe engage our students in sort of civic awareness. I also think this is an opportunity, although it's not the best timing, perhaps, and not the best manner in which we're being asked to do this, but I think it is an opportunity to sort of think about the representation that we have on our board, and think about possible other ways that we can have greater representation on our board looking forward.
Yeah, I can say that I went to the workshop about this also, and talking to trustees in other districts that have gone through this process, they are noticing that they do have a better representation of their mm-hmm. districts. So it's a good possibility.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? A better what?
Representation of different populations in their yes. district. Okay, do we have a motion? Or do we have more questions?
I just want to be clear that by tabling this, that we are doing it because we, as a board, are not trying to put off our obligations, but allow the timeline to really have a meaningful impact, meaning that we won't be taking Christmas break to be shaking the trees, to be engaging people. This is what I'm hearing from the role of the board.
Yes. I'd like to also ask the plaintiff, if we pass the resolution in January, to consider giving us the 180 days allowed by law beginning January 1. It's up to them to allow that, but I'd like to make that ask because, it allows us more time to create opportunities for conversation with the community.
I move to time now.
Is there comments from the public?
I'm sorry.
AC Carlson speaking for the Federation. So it's funny, we have talked as union leaders for years about why don't we have district elections? Mm-hmm. Because we see how hard it is for individuals to run, and recently the cost of filing has become prohibitively expensive. It's sort of counterintuitive. You would usually think that a union wouldn't support that because we have an advantage because we have a co-fund and members contribute and we're able to help candidates that we endorse with filing fees and their campaign costs. But we don't really want a world in which things are that way.
Yeah.
We want people to be able to run even if they don't have money. So we've always liked the idea of that. And this last election, I think the filing fees were like $3,700, and no one on their own can do that, and that's a discouragement to democracy. Mm-hmm. So we think it's a good idea. We do feel that it's unfortunate that it came this way. If there was someone who wanted this to happen, it certainly would have been a better model in the spirit of democratic discussion and saving the district money. For someone to have come to the district and said, hey, let's do this. And even if they had to get to the point where they said, if you're not going to do this, I'm going to file suit, rather than just filing suit. And I read into the law a little bit. It looks like automatically the attorney gets up to $30,000. And, you know, we were just talking about how we need more PBIS aides in the classroom, and that could have paid over one PBIS aide at one of our very struggling schools. So, I think that it's regretful that whoever did this didn't come to the district first to try to work with the district on this. But I think in the long run, the outcome will be good for our community. And I had lunch with, or coffee with Claudia the other day, and I offered, and I'll make this offer here again, that we would be happy to be part of the outreach. Mm-hmm. We could have someone come to our reps meeting, you know, whatever would work in terms of involving the employees of the district and understanding and knowing this process, we'd be happy to help.
Thank you.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, now a motion.
I move to table item 8.4.2 resolution 14-18-19. Table it till the January 16th meeting.
Thank you.
And I second.
Okay, well, you have either Sheila or Judy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstain? Okay, it's 6-1.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item is the annual board
policy
updates. Yeah. Now, we could do first reading for this, or we could do final reading.
I'm going to preemptively say I'd like this to be a first reading.
All right.
I'm not.
You mean you're 16 and are paid four votes?
Well, I read all the titles.
Any other thoughts about this?
First or second? First or final?
First. Okay.
Let's first, final.
Have a motion then for.
Yeah, I put the motion out, so I'm just looking for a second.
Second?
A second.
Okay, Aditi seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? All right.
Thank you.
And now for the annual board reorg.
Do we want to take a break for a second for Sheila?
For Sheila, she'll be back here.
Yeah, she's like feeling well, she said, so just to kind of keep an eye. Yeah, that'd be great for a minute.
I don't go far.
Oh.
Yeah, Sheila's feeling hot and cold, but I think we all are. This air is crazy today.
Mine doesn't work. So in terms of the...
She's paid by the district. Does she go out? You have to set aside funding for a personal permission. So technically, she's paid out of that.
It was yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I'm happy to be still on this year.
You like having a December birthday?
I'm just happy to be here, and I think that after turning 21, really nothing really matters.
We're waiting for Sheila to come back. We need to get our... And then we have this. We have the other meeting. And then we have the meeting of financial authority. And it's just this is the thing on the Okay, we're all back.
This is our annual board organizational meeting. This is an item that I traditionally facilitate. I'm going to walk us through our agreements and our board bylaws. First, I want to thank Claudia and Dee Dee for serving as this year's officers. And also, as is tradition, I'm going to present Claudia with a plaque recognizing her for service as our president this last year. Thank you very much for all of your support.
And thank all of you.
And may I just say something, Neil? I just want to say how much I always appreciate, because your backs are to us in a way, the way that Claudia always repeats the motion maker and the second and the vote, because it's really important, and I hope that whoever comes forward for the next one can thank Sarah, because I'd be lost without it.
And I have to say I'm going to miss our unofficial parliamentarian back here. Because she's been so important to our
really helpful
process, too. But thank you, Claudia. Our board bylaw 9100 outlines that each year the board will hold an annual organizational meeting, this meeting, and that we will discuss identifying potentially... we made these agreements that we'll discuss to identify members potentially interested in serving as officers prior to taking nominations. We'll elect a president and a clerk and or vice president from our members, and we typically historically have appointed the superintendent, a secretary to the board, to expedite getting signatures and things like that. And we authorize signatures. The role of the president, presiding over board meetings, signing all instruments, acts, orders, consulting with the superintendent and preparing agendas, working with the superintendent to ensure the board members have necessary materials and information, appointing board members to committees and appointing and dissolving all board committees, representing the district as governance spokesperson in conjunction with the superintendent, being able to communicate with the superintendent regarding urgent district business and disseminating information to other trustees. The role of the vice president is to fill in for the president when they're unavailable to complete their duties. Okay. So with that, I open it up for discussion. Nobody wants to speak. I'm hoping we will do our reorg today. Does anybody want to? Deb?
Well, you know, everybody up here is a leader, and everybody brings something to the table. Some folks are experts on curriculum and educational pedagogy, and some of us, I don't know if I'm saying that word right, but I kind of feel like it should be a drinking game because I hear a lot. And some folks really take a very earnest and informed accountability lens to our work. And I think, for me, the thing, and I'm not the most outspoken or well-spoken person up here, but I listen, I spent a lot of time in governance learning about how a board runs, and I think I have a proven ability to work with leadership as well as the community in a collaborative and respectful way. I would like to be considered president, and I'm putting my name out there.
Is there any more discussion?
I think we've got president.
We have to nominate.
Do we have a...
We have to nominate.
I'd be happy to nominate Deb for president. I'm not sure what the norm is.
So is there a motion? So I hear a first motion. Is there a second motion to
second.
Nominate? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstain? Thank you, Deb, for agreeing to serve as our president. Okay, in terms of vice president, is there any discussion about that particular position?
I've worked with Cindy this last year in the superintendent's evaluation, and I think she'd be a great vice president. Would you be interested?
Yeah, sure, I'd be interested in that. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on that?
Is that considered a nomination?
She needed to accept before I could nominate.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now I can nominate her.
Okay. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Abstain? Thank you, Cindy, for agreeing to serve as our vice president. Is anyone interested in motioning to appoint me board clerk?
Board secretary?
Board secretary, yeah.
I nominate you for board secretary.
You.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay.
Okay. So now we don't.
And board clerk, do we traditionally not have a clerk?
Do we not traditionally not have what?
Well, here we have a president, vice president.
And the clerk.
And often there's a clerk.
Well,
which
the
is
clerk.
Secretary.
It's both.
So
secretary and clerk.
Same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, this meeting is adjourned, but Deb will be opening the next meeting right now.
Madam President, may I just ask a quick question?
Sure.
Do we have anything that anyone wanted to bring forward as a possible item for future meeting?
Thank you.
Agenda?
Sorry, but I was wondering if perhaps we could look at developer fees, and in part just for education, in terms of if I'm the only one who needs it, it needn't be on the agenda, but I'd be interested in an overview of what are the revenues in the historical and present? What have our expenditures been historically? What is the process, if there is one, for deciding how our developer fees distributed within the district among campuses and centrally? At some point, I'd like to know more about that, whether it's an agenda item or offline. I don't know how the rest of the board feels about that.
Would the board like to see that as agenda item? I'm seeing three heads nod.
Agenda or a study session? What are you thinking?
Whatever.
Would that fit into study session for you? Would that?
It would be fine by me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm particularly looking at that large ending balance on the secondary side.
Right.
You know, who decides, how do we decide how that money gets distributed?
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's study session or offline or
you could
agenda doesn't
see if
matter
you think it would
me.
Fit
I
in.
Learn
I think we could put it into the study session for the budget.
Yeah.
The budget study session is later this year, though, not January.
Right.
Is that
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And
now, Deb.
And so have we adjourned this first meeting?
Yeah, adjourned the first meeting.
First meeting.
And now, I left it up here.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Another change. Once again, Claudia. Thank you for your job.
So, call this meeting to order. Is there the only item on the agenda is the designation and appointment of officers of the authority. So, can you discuss that?
Sure, I could go ahead and start that again. Would we like to, just historically, we have named our board officers as officers of the authority. We don't have to do it that way. Is there any discussion on how you would like to move forward with officers for the finance authority?
Oh. Fine with it the way it is.
Any other questions or comments? And there's no one here. So is there a motion to designate and appoint the officers of the board as the officers of the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary as the officers of the finance authority?
So moved.
She's so moved and I so second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
This meeting. Happy
Thank you. Holiday. Have a great holiday if I don't see you.
I'm so flabbergasted.
Wow.
I heard about that and I was like, oh. I bet.
All right.
I'm getting Claudia.